Okay, well, good to see you today. You made it. This is the last class. So the next, actually, the rest of the year is going to look a little bit different, as you know. Next Sunday, it's a different title. It's not Prayer for the Persecuted Church, but it's a similar theme. So praying for persecuted Christians. So we're going to have a Sunday, 9:30 hour in there, just praying for some different areas of persecuted Christians. So I think that'll be a very beneficial time for everybody to be reminded of those truths, as well as any prayer requests from our Go partners, things like that we can be praying for. So hopefully you will join us with that. Then following that, I always kind of get the orders mixed up. I know we have a celebration Sunday coming up with some neat things to celebrate, and then a congregational meeting. So got those three in a row. And then we're going to have a Sunday where we're going to hear from RHMA. So a lot of you probably don't know about RHMA, but we, in the spring, they come here and have like a little conference thing here for one day. So a lot of people don't really know about them. Pastor Phil's really involved with RHMA. They're a great organization. We used to support some of them in a little bit stronger ways. But I want to give you an opportunity to hear about RHMA and what they do. And then two Sundays, if you think back all the way to last fall, we had those two Sundays where we had the roundtable set up and a different focus like that during the 9:30 hour. That's what we're going to do again. It won't be hospitality, but it'll be something similar to that in a way. So the kind of one of those Sundays, you know, same thing where you get breakfast and get to converse with people. So a little change up there. And then after those two Sundays, then we have the Christmas program. And then, I can't believe we're saying this, then we have Christmas and New Year's. And then see you next year. So it's going to look just very different. Not very different, but a little bit different on Sunday morning. So, but you've made it. So let's pray now, and then we'll jump into our time today. Lord, thank you for this group. I thank you for just the willingness to come and participate and study and learn together and grow together. I pray that there can be truths from this class that will be beneficial, that we can continue to apply and think through and always grow. Help us always to be growing, always to be learning, always to be studying, always to be changing into your likeness, Lord. So may our goal and motivation be to have a God-glorifying marriage that really shines the gospel to this world, Lord, and continue to help us in that process. So even today, as we talk about enjoying our spouse, pray that we can learn together and think through ideas in which to do that. May you be glorified. In your name we pray. Amen. Okay. So I like to end this class with that topic, enjoying your spouse. So not to say that what came before this wasn't enjoyable. Certainly don't mean to suggest that in any way, but it's kind of a good thing to end this class on that note of not so much necessarily like talking through problems, although we will to some degree, but the actual enjoyment theme right there. So as you think about that, what does it look like to enjoy your spouse in marriage? I'd like to even just throw that out as a question to begin with. Love to get your take on that. What's it look like from your perspective to enjoy your spouse, to enjoy your marriage?
You know, if you just have somebody to hand these out, they would
Sorry, Josh.
What's it look like to enjoy your spouse, to enjoy your marriage? Ideas, thoughts?
Wanting to spend time together.
Okay, spending time together. Yeah.
Wanting
to spend time together. Okay. Yeah. Mhm.
Finding things you both enjoy to do together.
Mhm. Yeah. Good. So being able to do things together that there's an enjoyment in, that's important. Good. Mhm. What else? How about even the way you view the whole relationship? What would that look like? Alan?
It changes over the time.
that viewing of your relationship.
Okay.
Uh-huh. When you first married, it's just the two of you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the things going on, and then, but usually, and then later on, then you have kids and stuff. And then when you get older, and the kids are all gone, they don't come home much. They've got kids that are, got them busy and everything. It changes. And then mm-hmm. if one of you has problems, then you are taking care of them.
Mm-hmm.
Other than sometimes.
Yeah.
And it just is a different point of view, different way of looking at it.
Uh-huh. So is there still enjoyment in that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. That's good. Good.
Just push it.
For me, it's actually knowing that we can talk about anything,
mm-hmm.
even if it's hard.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say that there's no judgment, but that mm-hmm. we can truly be honest with each other.
Uh-huh. Good. Yeah, good. Well, there was a well-meaning father. He told a newly married husband to simply say yes, dear, to everything his wife said. And he ensured him that if he just practiced that simple phrase, that he and the new bride would enjoy many years of marital bliss. Would you agree?
No.
Well, yes, as well-meaning as that sounds, that's not going to bring you a happy, enjoyable marriage. It does require that we invest in it, as you've been seeing here. And so all the previous sessions that we've had, all the other topics that we've talked about are necessary, you know, if you want to be able to get to this point, to enjoying each other well. It's hard to do that if we're just dismissing everything that's come before that and just saying, oh, that's really not important. Let's just skip to this part. It's really going to struggle in that. So the Bible actually has a lot to say about enjoying your spouse, enjoying the marriage. Let's take a look at some of those passages. So a number of these are going to be from Song of Solomon. So I'll ask you to read some of those. And then a couple from Proverbs and Ecclesiastes. So mainly kind of right there in the wisdom literature. So who would like to take, I guess first is finding Song of Solomon. And then who would like to take Chapter 1, verse 2. Any takers? Teresa? Okay. We'll just do these one at a time rather than give them all out right now. That way you don't get lost. But they'll be in order, so we'll be going through the book of the Song of Solomon in order, so don't worry about having to skip around to all the different chapters. So we're just starting off in chapter 1, verse 2. Oh, Teresa will take that one. Alan, I'll let you have the next one then.
Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is better than wine.
Okay, so what do you see right there in that verse? What kind of enjoyment, delight do you find in that verse right there? Okay, so the bride expressing this longing for her beloved. Now, some of this I do acknowledge is going to be a little bit tough because I'm just asking you to read verses here, and it could be a little bit hard without sort of understanding the big flow of Song of Solomon. So I get that part of it, but we won't go too deep into that. But just even from what you see from the surface right there, I mean, you see that desire right there. She wants to kiss. Okay. Alan, can you read us chapter 1, verses 15 and 16?
Behold, you are beautiful, my love. Behold, you are beautiful. Your eyes are doves. Behold, you are beautiful, my love. A beautiful, my beloved. truly delightful. Our couch is green.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so again, okay, we'll stay away from the decorating aspect here, but what do you notice that even in that, in terms of delight, enjoyment?
She was talking to me. Can you ask the question again?
Yeah. What do you notice in those two verses there about the enjoyment, the delight in the relationship?
Seeing each other's beauty.
Yeah. Yep, good. So the pleasantness of the relationship, the beauty, the attraction that they have, it's not merely limited to a physical beauty here, but what I'm trying to point out too, it's in terms of the relationship, the pleasantness of that. I mean, there's this delight in that. Okay, chapter 2, who would like to read verses 3 and 4? And you're probably starting to pick up on, maybe I'll read the verse first before I volunteer.
Like an apple tree among the trees of the woods, so is my beloved among the sons. I sat down in his shade with great delight, and his fruit was sweet to my taste. He brought me to the banqueting house, and his banner over me was love.
Mm-hmm. So the bride there, and what's she expressing that you see in terms of the attitude, the focus toward her husband? Is she repulsed by him? Is she attracted by him? What's her desire? What's her movement toward him there?
She wants to be there with him.
Yeah. Yep. So the Song of Solomon is a little bit challenging because you've got a lot of these analogies, these metaphors here. So just kind of sorting that out. But, I mean, I think you're starting to see the delight, the satisfaction that she has. Okay. Skipping ahead to chapter 4, verse 10. Any takers on that one?
How delightful is your love, my sister, my bride. How much more pleasing is your love than wine, and the fragrance of your perfume than any spice.
Mm-hmm. Good. So here the husband is praising his wife. He's expressing his love, his affection. In verses 12 through chapter 5, verse 1, I'll read that. You'll see a lot of the same things too. A garden locked is my sister, my bride. A spring locked, a fountain sealed. Your shoots are an orchard of pomegranates with all the choicest fruits. Hymna with nard. Nard and saffron. Calamus and cinnamon, with all the trees of frankincense, myrrh and aloes, all the choice spices, a garden fountain, a well of living water, and flowing streams from Lebanon. Awake, O north wind, and come, O south wind, blow upon my garden, let its spices flow. Let my beloved come to his garden and eat its choicest fruits. I came to my garden, my sister, my bride. I gathered my myrrh with my spice. I ate my honeycomb with my honey. I drank my wine with my milk. Eat, friends, drink, and be drunk with love. So in there, just this garden imagery, it's talking about this unique relationship that this couple shares here. Verse 5, that is often seen by commentators as when the marriage is consummated, when they're now together as one, they're enjoying this divine blessing. So just a lot of this garden imagery right there. To describe the relationship. So, you know, the way it's framed, the way it's described is not this boring, unpleasant, repulsive relationship, but just the enjoyment that's found there. Chapter 7, verse 6.
How
beautiful and pleasant you are, O loved one, with all your delights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so again, expressing the delight there, the pleasure that he finds in his wife. Verse 10, now we have the wife's response.
I am my beloved's, and his desire is for me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So yeah, so certainly there in Song of Solomon, you see a lot of that, right? A lot of delight, a lot of enjoyment in the relationship. I think you really get that point, that this couple is deeply in love. Proverbs. So backing up a couple of books to Proverbs chapter 5. And we're going to be looking at verses 18 and 19. Mm-hmm. Any volunteers?
What chapter did you say?
Proverbs 5, 18 and 19. Okay.
Let her breast fill you at all times with delight, be intoxicated and pleasant.
Okay, so that's probably one of the most clear statements, calls, encouragement for this mutual, passionate sexual enjoyment and satisfaction within marriage is right there in Proverbs chapter 5 right there. So this delight, this enjoyment right there. Proverbs 18, 22.
He who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord.
Mm-hmm. So we have a verse right there that's speaking to the blessing, the positive nature of finding a spouse. There's a goodness in that. It's a good thing. And then one more from Ecclesiastes 9:9. So that'll end us up really with the theme that we've been saying here. So Ecclesiastes 9:9, right before Song of Solomon.
Enjoy life with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life that he has given you under the sun, because that is your portion in life and in your toil at which you toil under the sun.
Yeah, thank you. So that's a very direct command to experience and cultivate joy with your spouse as a primary blessing of life. So, you're starting to get the point. The Bible has a lot to say about enjoyment, about pleasure in marriage. God didn't design marriages to simply survive. He wants them to thrive. So, let's talk about how to do that. And how we're going to go about this is by presenting some joy barriers or joy thieves, so things that will steal our joy. So, we'll identify those, and then we'll talk about what can the put-ons be. What might we need to put off, and then what might we need to put on so that we can experience more of that joy right here. So one of the first ones we could call, look at what I've not. And that's a loss of joy. That's a joy thief that comes with dissatisfaction. So if we focus on comparison, if we're in the wrong competition, or if we hold the worldly standards, it's going to result in a loss of joy. So it could look like comparing our spouse or marriage to others. You know, my spouse doesn't cook like so-and-so does, or my spouse doesn't do that. Our marriage isn't as exciting as this one, dot, dot, dot. And so all those comparisons really just steal the joy from our relationships there. In terms of you individually, If we take a look at that theme, look at what I've not, what are some ways that you've even maybe wrestled with that or struggled with that or fought against that, this maybe temptation to compare or to engage in the wrong competition? We'll talk about that a little bit later, or even hold unbiblical standards. What have been some ways you've maybe seen that in your relationship or fought against that or... Or what are some ways in which that particular temptation could play out?
I think if you see on social media, couples that are constantly like going on vacations together, kid-free vacations, they can kind of start to get to you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, we never do that.
Uh-huh. Very true. Yep, so that's a great example. Mm-hmm. It could be that we're in the wrong competition. So the Romans talks about outdoing one another to show honor. We can end up trying to outdo one another to receive honor. And that means that husband and wife are working against each other instead of for each other, which is going to take away from that joy. Now, one of the ways in which you know that this joy thief is happening is if in terms of your attitude. Like if you find yourself grumbling or complaining, that's a pretty good indication that we want to take a look at this. Probably a good likelihood that that joy thief is trying to come in there and steal away our joy. So if we're complaining more than we're being thankful, it's pretty much a guarantee that you're going to struggle to find enjoyment in your marriage, right? If complaints are way up here and thanksgiving is way down here, like how are you going to really find joy in your relationship? That's going to be really hard. So one way to fight off this joy thief is to focus on gratitude. Would somebody mind to read us 1 Thessalonians 5, 16 to 18? 1 Thessalonians 5, 16 to 18.
Rejoice always, pray without ceasing, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you.
Thank you. So one of the ways, again, I say this not as a mandate, but just to try to give you ideas to brainstorm. You take them and use them how you will, okay? But I'm trying to be specific here with some of these suggestions. So could you start with even making a list, a weekly list or a daily list of three specific things your spouse does well. Three specific things your spouse does well, and then verbally affirm them. And then tell them that. If you're struggling with comparison, maybe the agreement you make with yourself is not to spend that time on social media. So just like you mentioned, you know, if it's like really wrestling, especially vacation time and seeing, you know, all these different people going off on these vacations, maybe it would be a good idea, you know, to have less time on social media, more time in thanksgiving and prayer. As far as competition, what about competing to see who can give the most sincere public compliments about the other to friends or family, or even the kids, when the spouse isn't listening? When the spouse isn't listening. So the honor's given, but you're not going to get any validation or even recognition from the other person because they're not even there. Does that make sense? So there's an aspect of it where if they're there and we say we can take that the wrong way because we can use that for our glory, even though we're still complimenting them, it's still coming back on us. But if they're not even there and we're doing this, I don't mean fake, right? We're talking sincere and genuine. So not flattery, but like truly sincere. They're not there. They have no idea it's even being said. The honor's not even going to ourselves then, right? So it kind of robs the temptation to still take that honor back for ourselves. Or you could compete to see who consistently takes the task that the other spouse hates the most without being asked. So if Karen doesn't like to do the dishes, maybe Kevin says, all right, I'm going to compete and see how many nights this week I can do the dishes. But he doesn't tell her that. In decisions that are about a preference, like where to eat, what movie to watch, what to set the thermostat at, maybe that's not a preference. Compete to see whose preference is yielded the most. So you're trying to take this outdoing one another and turn it in the right direction so that it's being used to serve the other person, not to serve yourself. What other ideas or thoughts might you have? What other things maybe have you seen in your own relationship that you've done something similar to any of those? Well, something to be thinking through, right? And I think as you continue to do this, what my hope that you're going to be able to see is that's what fuels our joy. As you begin to implement these things and work in this direction, maybe you're doing it right now and you don't even realize it. So maybe this is more just a recognition of that. But these things are going to fuel your joy, fuel that delight in the marriage. What about this? What about a race for the apology? So competing to be the first one to genuinely apologize after a conflict, regardless of who was more wrong, so to speak. So the honor would be prioritizing the relationship over our pride. And then refuse the scoreboard. So I try to use a lot of sporting analogies, but Scott's not here today, so you can tell him that. So it's not, so the in the conflict, it's this competition to see who can more quickly confess and refuse to bring up past sins. That's where the competition is. And this honors the person by treating them as new and redeemed, not by their past failures. How about this one? Full attention. It's one I have to work on. Full attention. But compete to see who can more consistently put their phone away or stop what they're doing and give their spouse 100% focused attention. So that honors their thoughts, their feelings as important. Or a competition to see who can leave the most thoughtful, unexpected note or do the most surprising small act of service, like filling up their gas tank or having their favorite coffee waiting. So those acts would be purely about delighting in the other person, not just this transactional type of thing. Any other thoughts on that one or questions? Ideas?
The thing I have to worry about when I do that is the word competition, because I am a competitive person, so hopefully it doesn't become an actual competition. That's in my mind. So I try not to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, our second area that can rob our joy is called the ghost of what could be. So not the ghost of Christmas past, but the ghost of what could be. And that loss of joy comes when we seek this idealized fantasy of maybe of our spouse or our marriage instead of the real imperfect version of it. So we have this idea in mind about what we'd like it to be, maybe what it was in the past, whatever the case is, but it's this fantasy that doesn't really exist, and that's what we're more focused on rather than what actually is. So we get lost in the if-onlys, maybe if only this would have happened, if only we could have this, but the more that we dwell in those what could be's or those if-onlys, the more we lose joy in what actually is. So people can, and we've seen this before, they can get stuck in who their spouse was when they were married, and they never really move past that. So maybe they've been married like 20, 30 years, and they keep thinking about their spouse and trying to go back to when they were married, when they were married. They're not like that anymore. You know, they're not like that anymore. And so they're mourning the loss of the former person instead of being thankful for the person that they have. And that's a really hard place to be in, and it's not going to lead to any joy there. Maybe then in response, they start on a fix-it mission. So if I could fix my spouse, if I could get them back to the way that they used to be when we were married, or if I could just fix them, then the marriage is going to be the one that we should have. So they can threaten, they can manipulate their spouse into changing back who they used to be or who they want them to be. Does that ring any bells? Seen that play out at all? How many of you are still married to the same person that you were, that you, when I say same person, I don't mean their name and face per se. I mean everything about them. How many of you are still married to the same exact person as you were the day you first got married? Anybody? We're not the same either, right? So we expect them to be the same, but we aren't the same either. So what do you think it looks like to find joy in this area? If your tendency was to think about the past and how they used to be, or even this fantasy, this daydream of what could be, what might be some things to do to grow in delight in this area?
Tell them ways that you've seen how they've grown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good. So it's going to take a delight in who God has created them to be and who they are now, not who they used to be. You know, 1 Corinthians 6, and such were some of you. Okay, so we have to allow room for God's hand to be at work, to allow them to change and to grow and to delight in who they are now. And that requires that we grow in loving them. So our love has to grow and expand. We love them despite their imperfections and flaws. So over, you know, the course of a marriage, you see more and more years of imperfections and flaws. And if that's not taken care of well, it can present many challenges. But remembering, when we were still sinners, Christ died for us. So as you think about that, how do I love my spouse despite their imperfections and flaws? Well, when we were sinners, Christ died for us. Third, the roommate syndrome. The roommate syndrome. So this loss of joy can occur when couples function more like roommates than husband and wife. And this is a very common one. It happens as couples take their focus off of Christ and loving each other as the Christ did the church, and when they focus more on the household or on the kids. So the conversation shifts really in kind of a way to being more about the to-dos. You know, did you pick up the dry cleaning? Who's taking the kids to soccer? You know, we need to pay this bill. And there's often little conversation or discussion beyond the sort of the surface issues of the day. You know, very little when it comes to joys or thoughts or how the other person is doing and so on. So think about some ways that this could play out. Couples can end up texting each other more than they have actual conversations. Or maybe conversations don't go beyond the surface level. You know, they just stay very surfacey. They stay easy. They avoid the hard topics. When it comes to conflict, it's avoided. Issues are swept under the rug instead of being dealt with. Couples can be so busy they feel like ships in the night. They hardly see each other. It's not uncommon for there to be a loss in physical affection. Maybe there's a kiss goodbye or a touch here and there, but not a lot more than that. At home, maybe couples don't even engage more than they really have to. They're buried in their own screens or their own hobbies. They're not really interested in each other's worlds. When there's questions asked, there's a lack of interest or response. You know, one couple might open up and say, "Wow, did you see the birds today? Oh, that's nice. I'm sure they'll be fine." And then move on to something else, right? So just like not engaging at all. So think about that one. How have you maybe seen that one at work? Any of that resonate, or have you seen aspects of that? Well, I'm sure from time to time there's at least something in there that you probably can say like, "Oh, yeah, that one rings a little bit true." So let's think about, so our goal is, again, our goal here today is to move to the enjoyment, not necessarily talking about the problems. So in order to do that, we have to first recognize it and call it for what it is. So we have to recognize, acknowledge that that's the way we're acting, and then repentance where needed in that. So putting off would be, some of these things may need to be put off. That we've talked about right here. And then our focus now is going to be the putting on. Let's talk through that. Because it's in the putting on that we can help restore the joy in the relationship. So if maybe a roommate, one symptom of the roommate syndrome is that we kind of fall into these categories of those are your chores, these are my chores, and that's how it is. One way to fight against that would be to challenge ourselves to do more than our, quote, half. So just because it's in falls in the bucket of our half doesn't mean that we're restricted by that, right? We can do part of theirs as well. So that can be a way to help us grow in that area right there. And then don't even tell the other one. So instead of telling them like, oh, you know, today I know it wasn't, I know the dishes aren't my responsibility, but I just want to make sure you look in the sink today. Just do it anyway. Or the trash or whatever it is. Instead of complimenting them when they do things that benefit you, compliment them on their character. I love the patience you showed when that guy cut you off in traffic. I love the fact that you didn't throw your cup at him, you know, right? So it doesn't necessarily benefit you per se. Of course, that one maybe a little bit more, but complimenting on them on their character. How about when they enter the room? What would the put on look like if we're trying to get past the roommate syndrome? So they come in the room, you're previously like doing something, you know, maybe you're reading a book, looking at your phone, whatever the case is. They come in, help me understand what's the putting on look like?
Acknowledging them and being happy to see them, not order, you know, what their agenda is going to be for you, for them, you know, for the evening.
Good. Yep. Good. That's right. Yeah. I mean, just think of how far like an acknowledgement and a smile goes, right? I mean, that changes the whole dynamic in a lot of ways. Honors their presence. Think of Philippians 2, talking in that section there, especially verse 3, about really caring for the other person and preferring them above ourselves. That's a great way to do that. How about when they're talking? What might we do then? Okay, eyes on them. Uh-huh.
Not me doing something else.
So not
you're listening while you're doing it.
Not multitasking?
Yes.
Okay. That's right. Now, here's one that can be a little bit hard to talk about, but I want to anyway. Some of you may go to bed at separate times, and that's not necessarily wrong. I can't find a verse, a passage that says that you shouldn't do that, but I think it is important to know that that can impact a marriage, especially if that's a pattern. You know, if every night you went to bed at different times, that is going to have an impact, and, you know, you can fuss about that and say, no, it's not, but it's going to. I think the ideal is you try to do that at the same time so that you have time to talk and listen and pray before you go to sleep. You know, so just even that aspect of it can change things. Maybe physical touch is lacking. So, you know, there's just very, very little physical touch. And so maybe your goal then is to intentionally give the other person a certain number of non-sexual touches every day. So you don't want it just geared toward the intimacy aspect, but just the non-intimacy aspect, right? So, okay, today my goal is a non-sexual touch, you know, 6 times a day. Hug, handshake, whatever the case is, right? I mean, not handshake. That's okay. That's just jet lag.
One thing that is how Jeff and I, we decided, I don't know how many months ago, just to make sure our day starts out with a 20-second hug.
Good. I like that. Yeah.
You know, conversation.
Uh-huh. Good. Date nights, you don't have to go out. Though, of course, it's great if you can, but, you know, sometimes with kids and families, everybody's in different situations like that. But you could plan some kind of intentional activity together when the kids go to bed every month. So that could be a challenge that you make for yourself. What about conversations? So again, my goal is not to get overly complicated on this, but just give you a few ideas as you leave here. But even just thinking about an intentional conversation weekly with them. So I'd like to throw three things at you. What if you did this? What if you shared with them three things? So a high, your best moment. What was your best moment of the day? Or week? The low? What was what's your biggest stress, your biggest fear? And then third, something God has taught you today. So if you look at those, that's not overly complicated, right? You don't have to go to do a lot of research for any of these, but think of how that takes the focus, like how that can move you from just being roommates or feeling like roommates to a deeper, more intimate, more enjoyable relationship, just to know this about the other person and have opportunity to share that with them. Any other thoughts? Questions on that particular struggle? Okay. Number four, the fade. The fade. So in some ways, some of these are similar to each other. But this one, we talk about couples slowly drifting apart. So they don't necessarily realize it. But as they look back, they realize that there's a widening space, not a narrowing of the relationship, not a closeness, but a distance in the relationship. And typically with something like that, you don't see it immediately. But as you're looking back, you now start to see, well, we're not actually closer, we're actually a little bit farther apart. So the fade can happen in some different ways. If we don't practice biblical peacemaking, if we allow each other to punish ourselves or not resolving conflict, there's going to be a distance in the relationship there. So like physically, we could be present, but emotionally, we could be somewhere else. So if we're not allowing the other person access to our feelings and thoughts, our joys and our hurts, that can result in a fade, a growing distance between each other. That can happen when we stop talking to each other about our dreams, our plans, and so on, and maybe even start talking more to friends. So that, of course, could be really hurtful if you have no idea about your spouse is like really struggling with this, and then or really has this big dream, and then you're in this other conversation with your friends, and they bring it up, and you're like, oh, well, I didn't know that, right? Like, you didn't even tell me. So, or when we stop talking to each other and start talking at each other, that will result in a fade. So there can be lots of conversation going on. When I say conversation, there can be lots of talking going on, but it's not actually talking with each other, it's talking at each other. And that's not bringing people together. So one spouse might say, I had a really hard moment today. This was really hard. Spouse number two, oh yeah, you think that's hard? Let me tell you about my day. So it's just one trying to outdo the other, not talking with each other, but talking at each other. This can play out in hobbies, our social life, activities. Now, we don't have to do all those things together all of the time. It's okay, and it's good to have particular hobbies and activities that you do by yourself. But if everything in your life is done apart, that's not going to help you move closer together either. So again, what do we do about those things? If you're looking at that, as you're recognizing that, well, repentance, putting off some of these old practices, putting on new habits, new patterns. Well, we've talked a number of times about communication, about the importance of taking time for that. So I'll keep saying that. Schedule the time if that's what it takes. If you just find yourself in a season or a week or not a week, but just a period of life in which you're not having that communication, like you just may have to schedule it then. Do what it takes to be able to have that time. Challenge yourself. Here's a challenge for you. Do I know what my spouse is afraid of this week? So think about that. I mean, it's something very specific, right? And how you can then pray for that and ask them about that and follow up with them. If you know that, if you ask that at the beginning of the week and then use that as an opportunity to have conversations and pray with them throughout the week. What are they, or you can add even more questions to that. What are they looking forward to? What are they discouraged about? What do they want help with? So these four questions right there can be great questions to challenge yourself to be able to ask and answer at the beginning of the week so that you know how to check in and help throughout the course of the week. Here's another one that's can be tough to talk about, but we still want to. Sleeping in separate beds. So that's, in a lot of ways, become the norm. Just looking into the numbers, the numbers range between 25 and 40% of couples that do that, that sleep in separate beds at night. And I think the greatest reason given by Christians would be health-related challenges. Like they're just too noisy, you know, I just can't sleep with them there, you know, so on and so forth. So again, I want to be careful with what I say about this, how far I go with it. But again, I can push gently and just say the challenge would be to try to sleep together as much as possible. And that same thing would go with having kids sleep with you. So again, I know there's people who really get worked up about that, who really believe that that's I'm not looking to get in arguments about that, but there's challenges that can go along with that, right? So if that's a pattern, a practice that you have, you know, you got to find ways to be able to overcome that, to be able to have that oneness, that time when you can really talk and connect with your spouse. Financial decisions, that could be an area in which fade happens, more of an independence in those, even getting to the point where they're completely separated financially, mental loads or decisions. The fade can happen in that when one person ends up with all the mental load, such as knowing when the appointments are, what the kids need, who to call, and the other spouse is very passive in that, just kind of waiting for tasks to be assigned. So instead of that, you know, we want to work together, to talk together, to mutually share the load of that so that one person doesn't have to have all of that on them. Spiritually, you know, we can pray for individually, but not this unified coming together before the throne. So our challenge for the week could even be seeking to institute a regular practice of praying one specific need for your family, your spouse, or your day. So that's a great way to do that. What about church? I'd say for the most part, spouses go to church together, but probably I think for the majority we might say, well, maybe I don't want to say that, but maybe for some, There's no follow-up with that. So like the sermon, you know, how does it apply to our marriage? That could be a great discussion question, right? So as you think about that at some point, like, okay, the sermon, let's take it back to the applications for our marriage. What would that look like? Any thoughts, questions on that particular struggle, the fade? Okay, and then one more here, the fragmented heart. So distractions, that's a huge loss of joy in the marriage. There's all kinds of things that are trying to steal attention from our spouse, from the relationship. We've talked about social media, phones, texting. Those distractions can always be coming right there. Could be some of us struggling with taking work home. So not leaving it at the door, but carrying it in the door. And not being, you know, maybe physically being present, but not fully present with our families right there. It could be one of you is the planner. You're the constant one who is always planning something. There's always a to-do list that you're making in your mind. And you're maybe present with the family, but not really present, because you're always thinking about the next task or what needs to be accomplished yet. We have distractions from hobbies or pleasures. So again, you know, it's one thing the kids are there and you're working together, but as soon as the kids are not there in bed or whatever the case is, you're off in your own world, right? There's other things distracting you. It could be one spouse won't stop talking. They're always talking about themselves and they rarely take time to listen to the other person. Or it could be we just have a hard time saying no. So the request comes in and we want to help. But we take away from our families in doing that. So again, let's move to the put-ons now. With the phone, you know, you may need times for no phone time to be able to focus on each other and the family right there. Carrying work home, that is a challenge to many, but it's also a choice, right? So we have to intentionally choose what we're going to do with that. Ask the Lord for help to leave the work behind for the night, to be present with our spouse and our family. Maybe if you absolutely have to, if it's just not working, put your phone and computer in a place where you can't access it very easily and for the night, if that's what it takes. What about for you planners? The ones who are always planning in your mind and thinking about what's next. That's a good call to remember that the Lord wants us to enjoy what He's given us, not to be always looking ahead to what we think that we need. So before moving on to planning something else, commit to sharing current joys that you have about the moment or memories that you have. Could be a way so that it takes you off of the what's coming and keeps you on the right now. If you're struggling to say no, remembering the commitment you have to your spouse is the second most important one you have, with the Lord being first. So not agreeing to things that are going to take time away from what you've committed to your spouse. What else? You've heard all that. You've heard some suggestions. What else? What other things have you found when it comes to practical ways that you can grow in enjoying your spouse? I'd like to just take a minute and hear from you all, if there's anything you've thought of.
I think, you know, another aspect is just going out and doing an enjoyable activity. I mean, a date night, but like just a really fun thing. And I think that builds relationships as well, as I know some people connect well by doing. And so like to enjoy your spouse is to remind yourself why you fell in love with that person. So enjoying something together.
Yeah, good.
And then to tack onto that, I think, I know a lot of us in this room are older, but especially when your kids are younger and the days become weeks, becomes months, years, is make sure to schedule a weekend away every year. Mm-hmm. Just have that in your, you know, and ask those grandparents to come and babysit. They want to do that, most likely.
Yeah.
It's just that making that time. And,
Good. Surprises? Any of you like surprises? Good surprises? Yeah. Well, what about once a week initiating a small unexpected act that delights your spouse? Maybe you bring home their favorite drink or leave an encouraging note on their pillow or suggest that last minute activity that they enjoy. Again, that fights against that apathy. It reminds them that they're actively thought of and pursued. Perhaps you could write at some point during the week a short, specific note that highlights a positive quality or kindness that they demonstrated. you know, I noticed how patient you were on the phone or with the kids and leave it there. You could commit to observing just a small positive change in your spouse. Maybe it's a different haircut or a new outfit or a different way to approach a task. I love how you responded to that. I think that color looks great on you. You know, just something like that. And then brainstorm in 10 things you've never done before. Try a new food or visit a place or take a dance lesson. Put them on some slips and then pull one every couple of weeks to schedule. Maybe every Sunday night you could look at the calendar for the week, pray for wisdom for the upcoming appointments and meetings and challenges, and then thinking of one new way your family can be generous with time or resources or money each month. So we've put a lot out there. I'd like to point you to 1 Corinthians 13 as an excellent passage that I think, frankly, would resolve so many of these issues if we live that out well. So the love chapter. So I think it's a great one. I'd encourage you to go home and read that and think through that as you just consider the different ways in which you can grow in enjoyment of your spouse and your relationship. So thank you for your time and effort that you've put into this class, and we'll look forward to seeing you back January, second Sunday of January, really, back in these equipping classes of 2026. So you are dismissed.